So we sell mystery football shirts. On the way, I explain that to everyone. It's something that's exploded because of like FIFA, gambling, loot boxes and gaming. Even like match attacks or like Panini stickers used to collect as a child. So like customers come on, they buy a mystery box and then they can tell us teams you want to avoid.
I was watching Overlap and he's sitting there in one of your jerseys. What happened? It's Gary Neville, by the way. Yeah, it's the Overlap podcast. If you aren't football fans, well, go and watch it. It's the biggest football podcast there is.
Yeah, it was huge. Like instantly revenue that day, like 5x'd. I think probably the shout out alone is worth maybe 150 grand worth to us in like business. And it gave us like a new level of momentum.
Cybercrime is exploding. Ransomware, phishing, AI-powered attacks, they're hitting businesses every single day. Most companies just don't survive a major breach. Nostra's CloudShield 365 gives you complete, always-on protection. Built on Microsoft Business Premium with advanced threat detection, 24/7 monitoring, and compliance built in, this isn't a nice-to-have anymore. It's essential. Don't wait until your business becomes a headline. Visit nostra.ie, that's nostra.ie, and get your business protected today. Before we dive into today's episode, I want to share a game changer for your business, Azure Communications. When it comes to print and marketing solutions, these folks, led by CEO Jenny Johnston, are the real deal. Whether you need an eye-catching brochure, sleek business cards, or a full-blown digital campaign, Azure Communications has you covered. They're not just about high-quality prints or digital campaigns. They're also about delivering great results. And here's the best part. Just for listeners of The Entrepreneur Experiment, you can get 20% off your first order. Just give them a call or go online and use the code VOX20. With personalized service and fast turnaround times, Azure Communications will help you make the impact your business deserves. Trust me, when it comes to making your brand stand out, Azure Communications is the provider of choice. Check them out at azurecom.ie. Use code VOX20. Elevate your marketing game today.
Rory, welcome to the pod.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Very welcome. Thank you for joining us after your travels all across the US.
Yeah, it was a good mini vacation.
The last time someone named Gary mentioned your shirt in the box, it was rather more famous Gary. I was watching Overlap and he's sitting there in one of your jerseys. What happened?
Yeah, it was a great moment for us. So I met Gary at a Queen's hosted event, bit of behind the scenes, like he was speaking, and I just asked Queen's to meet him beforehand, and I didn't really have any expectations going into it.
It's Gary Neville, by the way. Yeah, it's the Overlap podcast. If you aren't football fans, well, go and watch it. It's the biggest football podcast there is. But he was wearing one of Rory's shirts at the very start of the podcast. So he's sitting there and he gives it this big build up. Like he's like, oh, they were shouting in, who's the shirt? And he's like, oh, I met this guy Rory in Belfast and blah. Like talk about like the most prominent exposure. But straight away, that's interesting. You just emailed to meet him.
Yeah. There's a girl I knew at Queen's. I emailed her and then she was able to set it up with her colleagues. And I thought it would be like 50 people meeting him beforehand. It was just 6 of us. And then I thought I would only get like maybe 30 seconds, like an elevator pitch, but it was then a 20-minute conversation. And he really liked the story. He was asking how many sales we did. And then when I told him 100,000, he was like doing the maths in his head. What was the price of the shirts and stuff like that?
Businessman. He's always got that business head. I think people are always surprised if they're not kind of football fans. They're all surprised at how savvy and how sharp he is as a business person. I don't think they understand what an empire. I love his like kind of motto is he wants the second half of his life to be more successful than the first, which is a bloody big statement when you consider he's one of the most decorated footballers in English history.
Yeah, it's a tough challenge, though.
It's a big one. I think he's up for it, though.
Yeah, he certainly seems to be doing well. Like he was talking about his business ventures. He's got the Overlap. He's got the hotels. He's got the university. So it seems to be fairly flat out.
So I think this is interesting because people would kind of look at that and go, oh, wow, he got a shout out on the biggest football podcast in the UK. Mad. But you just made that happen. You just asked well, had a connection, and then just went and did it.
Yeah, we didn't even ask for the placement on the podcast or anything. It was just, here's your shirt, like, this is a gift from us to you. Then he goes, I'll wear this on the podcast next week.
What were you thinking when he said that?
I was thinking, will he remember? Because he's got that many things going on. And then we were kind of like in anticipation for when the podcast dropped. You know, will he wear the shirt? Will he mention where he got the shirt from? And then I woke up to like the podcast, because I think it went live at 6 or 7 a.m. and I woke up to it and he was wearing it. So that was like huge. In the first 40 seconds, he like shouts out the brand and like tells people to go shop there, which is really cool.
It's unreal. What happened after that? Well, like, did you notice any increase in sales or was there any impact to yourselves? Because I always wonder this, because you see people get shout outs. I'm like, oh, I wonder, did that make any difference to them?
Yeah, it was huge. Like instantly revenue that day, like 5x'd. I think probably the shout out alone is worth maybe 150 grand worth to us in like business. And it gave us like a new level of momentum. So like our revenue jumped significantly, like instantly. But then we were able to like continue that. So I think it gave us just huge awareness that we were able to just keep building on.
So it works.
Yeah, it does.
But the right person at the right time. Like he couldn't, I think in your dreams, he's probably like the ideal person. The mix of business, football, credibility as well.
Credibility's huge.
Yeah. Credibility's massive. Like, and he's just, it's everything, isn't it? Because people are always like, oh, influencer marketing, blah, blah, blah. But then it's all these things tied together. Like it's the brand of the overlap. Because when I watch, I never miss one. I will watch every single one. And you're invested in it. Like you care what they're talking about.
Yeah. It's a great podcast. We have it on in the office every week now. I think because it was like organic, it wasn't paid. It came off really well. Like obviously they have their main sponsors on the podcast, but he was just, it was a natural shout out. So I think that's what helped as well.
And it's always interesting as well for people to learn this, because I think there, people always assume there's something else going on there. Like they always kind of go, oh no, he must like, he must have paid for that, or there must have been this, that and the other. Is there anything else you've done or had happen in the last couple of years that, that works similarly well? Obviously nothing, I don't think will have worked as well as that, but is there anything that worked kind of similarly well?
We haven't really had any organic moments similar to that. Our main acquisition channel is just Meta advertising. And that's been a gradual process of like refining ad creatives, working with agencies, bringing it in-house. So I wouldn't say there's been one moment in terms of that. We've had like features in other publications or podcasts. Ben Foster, the cycling GK, he inadvertently bought 2 shirts maybe 2 years ago.
No way, did he?
Yeah. And then Marca, I believe, is that how you pronounce it, is the Spanish newspaper.
Yeah.
They did like a giveaway on their social medias 2 years ago, and that was like 2 million followers or something they had on their Instagram.
Wow, okay.
So we've had a few organic moments, but nothing as big as that.
What happens when you have an organic moment like this? I often wonder that when Tim Ferriss talks about this as like his hug of death, because obviously he is so big that if he mentions something, it can crash the website, it can crash their orders, it can just, he calls it the hug of death because it's killed some smaller businesses if he mentions them too early, which is a mad problem to have, but still, I guess, a problem. So what other stuff comes with it that you actually mightn't have expected?
Yeah. Well, we were very, like, intentionalized to capitalize in the moment, so I filmed ads around it, like packing his box and reacting to him unboxing it and stuff like that, and those have got about 3 million views themselves. So those did well, but like it did cause us problems. Just overnight revenue doubling is not like easy to deal with. As a small business, we don't have like huge cash reserves, we didn't have huge stock, so we had all these orders coming in. And then there was a bit of a backlog. So maybe it takes a week or two to fulfill an order because we're waiting for stock to come in.
I get you.
So it was challenging. It still is. We're coming out the other side of it now. So like our revenue's still holding strong. But yeah, it's been a tough kind of 3 months where we had delays with orders and a lot of customer service tickets. And then we had some staff leaving, which was just natural. But it just is more stress.
This is why I love doing the pod, because, you know, we kind of look at you and we kind of go, oh, Rory's got it figured out and he's got a cool business, and you kind of look, it's all rosy. And that's why I love the kind of in-depth stuff, because people will kind of go, ah, okay, that's actually interesting. And like, actually, if I ever have that moment, I need these systems in place. We probably should go back to the start. What is it exactly that you do?
So we sell mystery football shirts. On the way, I explain that to everyone, because certain people don't understand, especially like if you're over 40, you're like, what do you mean it's a mystery football shirt? Like, why don't you just pick the shirt you want? I think it's something that's exploded because of like FIFA, gambling, loot boxes and gaming. Even like match attacks or like Panini stickers you used to collect as a child. So like customers come on, they buy a mystery box, and then they can tell us teams you want to avoid. So like, I'm a Liverpool supporter, I wouldn't want an Everton top.
I'd be avoiding Liverpool.
Yeah, you're a United supporter. And then you can avoid like certain colours. So say like if you've orange hair and you don't want a top that's red or stuff like
can
that.
You?
Yeah, yeah. We get that quite a lot.
No way.
Mm-hmm. And then like there's other ones like beer sponsors or stuff like gambling sponsors.
Ah, yes. Okay, that makes a lot of sense now. Okay, so you can kind of, so I'm going to go on now, Mr. In a Box, and then I can say, okay, I'm a medium, I don't want anything from like the UK, or do you just say who do you support and then your system figures it out?
Yeah, so you say who you don't want, because we want like as much selection as possible on the back end for us. We're not like Amazon, we don't have 4,000 tops, we have maybe 3,000 tops at the time, and there are about 20 different clubs.
Okay.
So, yeah, for instance, you would select avoid Liverpool, maybe avoid the colour pink, and then on the back end we go and pick a team from say the Moroccan league or from the MLS, and then we'd send it out to you.
A mate of mine, he posted about this about 3 weeks ago. It was his 40th, I think, and he got like an Al Hilal, is that how you pronounce it? He got their jersey in your box, and he was delighted with himself, started the Club World Cup as well.
That's class.
Like, that's mad. Like, that's really cool. So I think as a concept, people kind of go, ah, I get it now. It's cool. But like, I think a couple of years ago, people would have went, what? Why wouldn't you just buy your United or Liverpool kit? You kind of hinted at it there. It's probably like a mixture of like Panini, but also like the gaming, the kind of mystery, the unboxing thing. Like, you know, that's a huge thing online. It's like, oh, mystery unboxing. You know, there's a website in the US, you probably know it. They unbox like Pokemon cards and stuff. You buy them.
Yeah.
And they unbox them for you online. Like, that's a mad business model.
Yeah, it's growing so much. Kind of like that gambling loot box, I think it's almost called. Yeah, I remember like playing FIFA when I was younger, and you had FIFA packs.
Yeah,
it's just gambling for kids. Ours is kind of like gambling with a guaranteed return. Like, you're getting something you can't wear.
Yeah,
you might not like the top. Like, that's the thing we say. Our aim is to spark an emotion when you open the box. So you're either like, oh, not that top, or you're like, yay, that top. But you feel something towards it, and often we hope you like it.
Where did this idea come from? Because it is pretty unusual. Like, I think when you started, what, 4 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would have been kind of pretty new 4 years ago. Like, where did this idea come from?
Yeah, so I didn't come up with the mystery football shirt concept. I was already selling football shirts, vintage tops at the time. And essentially, I read a book at the time, 4-Hour Working Week, a great book. And I realized I needed to pivot the business from selling the vintage tops because it was just such a time sink. So with vintage tops, I had to like buy each shirt, list each shirt, market each shirt, ship each shirt.
So you were buying them, buying one, flipping it then online, buy another, flipping it.
Yeah, it was just so time consuming. And I thought I needed one product essentially. And then I was like, what can I do with all these shirts? That's one product. And it was the mystery football box. And then there's people doing it at the time, but there was like, they weren't good at marketing. Their website wasn't good. They didn't have the ability to like avoid teams, so you could get your rival team, and they didn't have subscriptions. So I was a bit biased at the time. I thought I was better at marketing. I came up with like the avoid idea, and then subscriptions we did as well. So kind of took something that was already gaining traction, and I think we just made it better. And then also I had like the football shirts, and I was a bit biased. I thought my football shirts were better than what other people could get because I'd been in the industry already for about 2 years.
I think that's the key, though. Any of the great business ideas, people think they have to be these brand new, revolutionary, world-beating ideas never been seen before. Whereas in reality, they don't. They have to be exactly what you said there. They have to be something people are kind of familiar with already, and you put a fresh spin on it. You add the mystery. You add like this new model. And timing is everything, right? You talked about it there, about the loot boxes and this kind of like growing trend towards like the surprise and delight element of like, you know, I just don't want to just go in and buy another United shirt. I definitely don't want to do that now. Whereas I think there's also like a trend towards buying vintage shirts and things like that now. There's been a huge trend towards buying like older versions of even your own team or older versions of like European teams, like the Italian league. I remember Sampdoria back in the day, Inter Milan, like they're classics. They're absolute classic shirts.
Football shirt culture is definitely coming a long way. Like in the 80s and 70s and 90s, it was like frowned upon to wear like a football shirt to a game. And now everyone wears football shirts to a game. Like people wear, I mean, tops like this out and about the festivals.
Yeah.
It's changing. And it's definitely going in the right direction for us.
For you, yeah. And then you said you were kind of like setting it up on your own and then you kind of just pivoted into this with 4-hour work week. But was it always your intention to work for yourself?
Not really, I don't think. I started business like buying shirts just to make money. So I started in lockdown during COVID just because I had like, I was still in school and I had plenty of spare time. And then I did a finance degree. I've just finished there. And I think when I was like 18, 19, I still wanted to go and work. Like I didn't think the business would take off as it did. Still wanted to go and work in the finance industry. It still appeals to me somewhat, like, you know, go and work on Wall Street or something like that and wear a suit. But that's just not the way it's panned out.
So you've just finished your degree now?
Yeah.
Oh, congrats. So you ran the business and you did your degree simultaneously.
Yeah.
What was that like?
It was tough, and I think it probably held the business back. But to some degree, I was like sunk cost. So I was like a year in before the business was properly flying. And then my mum was in my ear, I just need to keep going. So I did the second year, and then third year was placement. So that was fine. I just worked for myself.
Oh, nice. Yeah. You're able to do that.
Yeah.
I love that. I like that now.
Last year was the toughest, the final year, because like the business was 6 employees maybe at that stage.
Okay.
And you're like only in the office 2 days a week because you're in university 3 days a week.
Mm.
And I can't really do things in half measures. So like I was still taking university serious enough, even though I'll probably never use the degree. Like I was still proper trying in the tests and stuff like that. So it was tough. And I think it was probably tough for our staff because I'm only available really 2 days a week. But it was good. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
I think college is the perfect time to start a business.
Yeah, definitely. You have no, like you don't have anyone to rely on. You don't have like a huge mortgage to pay off. It's the perfect time to do it.
And you do have time.
Yeah.
Like you do have all this excess time. Like you might have like 4 lectures in a day. Still gives you 4 hours, right? So you're going to do an 8-hour day. This still gives you 4 hours to do something apart from pissing around.
Yeah.
Which is important too in college. You know, the crack has to be had as well. But like, I think it is the perfect time because if, and I always say this, so I do a bit of teaching in Dublin here for like entrepreneurship students. I'm like, you've got the perfect cover here. No one's going to like suspect you of like coming to take their business. It's like you're a student, you're starting a business, you reach out to people. 9 times out of 10 people are going to go, I remember when I was trying to start my business, going to help them out. Whatever that is, whether that's information or like a contact or a lead or whatever it is, it's the perfect time because everyone wants to see a student do well, especially if they're entrepreneurs. They always see themselves in you. They'll always go, oh yeah, do you know what? Fair play for giving out a crack.
Yeah. I think as a student, you're maybe, if you're trying really hard, you're 3 days a week really taken up with classes and revising and doing assignments. So you've got 2 days in your normal work week. And then if you work on the weekends, you've got 4 days really to make the most of it. So yeah, it's a great opportunity. Really, I don't think many people take up like the chance, maybe. Not risk-seeking enough, but...
What were the challenges for you? Because obviously that is difficult, though. As much as we both want people to do it, there is challenges. What were the biggest challenges you had balancing both?
Time management, probably, but I've always been pretty good at that. So, like, my calendar, I'd have pretty much every hour allocated to doing something.
Would you use Google Calendar?
Map out the day, just so I know what I'm doing. That was like the best thing I did. It helped me so much during that period. You'd be planning weeks in advance. I think also maintaining like a social side. So like I'd still go on a night out, but maybe not as much as like a normal student would do. And then even like other things, like instead of a night out, like I used to play football, but I just don't have the time to play football anymore.
The irony.
Definitely didn't last year.
The irony.
Yeah. So you do have to make some sacrifices, but I think it's worth it.
What were kind of like the... I almost even loathe to ask this question because it's kind of a bit of a cliche, but what were the like the key learnings you took, like the mistakes made, phrase whatever you want, but what were the kind of key things you wish you'd knew then that you know now?
I wish I was better at management when I was starting off. Like during that early period, I wasn't a great manager of staff. Like I thought just, I didn't really keep people like, give them the vision or like give them goals and give them what they could look like in a year's time within the business. I just thought, you know, let people work away and it'll all work out. I was maybe too trusting. So I think that's the only thing you can like learn with experience. I'd say that is like the one thing that has been like most painful for me is like management and getting better over time.
I think it's good self-awareness though. And I would agree with you. I've done the same in the past where I just was like, yeah, this is what we do. And let's let people off as if they're somehow meant to know what's in my head. Like they're somehow meant to like understand, oh yeah, that's what Gary really cares about. He doesn't give a crap about this. This is the most important thing. This is how I should be spending my time. Whereas as I got older, I kind of realized I don't particularly like management, as in I don't like that whole thing of being a manager, whereas I just try to use full transparency now. So I have a document called Gary OS, so Gary Operating System, and I give it to people going when they're working with me. So this is how I like to work. This is kind of what I expect. This is what I want. This is what I don't want. If something happens, this is the outcome I want to happen. And I think it just comes with time. I think, how can you know when you're like 19 going, oh, this is how you manage a team of six?
Yeah.
Some things like just come with experience.
And when you're 19, managing people who are like 26 or in their 30s and stuff like that, there's definitely imposter syndrome a little bit. Even at the time, if I thought there wasn't, it's like tough to tell people what to do when they're like older and more experienced than you.
Have you felt imposter syndrome?
I probably didn't at the time, or at least I thought I didn't, but like subconsciously, definitely, and reflecting on it, definitely. Like I definitely, it's held me back from like managing people, I think. But I've got better with it over time.
What's helped you get better? Because this is an interesting one that I think every single founder I've chatted to has a version of this. Everyone has this, like, it's even interesting when you go into different rooms now. I'm lucky enough to get asked to certain events and you see some really elite operators and they'll tell you afterwards, they're like, oh, I found that hard earlier. I couldn't believe I was in the room with so-and-so. And I'm like, you're one of the best founders in Ireland or the UK. How would you feel that? Like, it's so interesting that it just doesn't seem to leave you. You just get better at managing it. So how have you kind of found ways of managing it?
I think you just build confidence over time. Like, you know, success builds and that builds confidence. Like a lot of people, especially in our first year, would have thought we were like a flash in the pan, we'll be gone. And I probably thought that too, to some extent. Like I remember doing a course that was put through for the university. It was like an All-Ireland thing. And the presentation at the end. And after it, you're getting feedback, and the girl who's running the program, who's like multiple, it's like well-renowned entrepreneur. She goes to me like, I think, I don't know if this business will be a success, but I think you'll be a serial entrepreneur. And that was like tough to take at the time. So I think...
Oh, so it was kind of like a backhanded compliment?
Yeah.
You're really good, but I don't know if this business is really good?
Yeah.
Interesting. What did you think when she said that?
It was motivating, definitely.
I'll show you.
Yeah. It was, because I never really got feedback like that before. I was very harsh. Like, I was probably 19 at the time when I got
okay.
That. So, but over time, like, we've been in business 4 years now, and we've sold over 200,000 football shirts.
Wow.
We'll probably close out at like 10 million revenue in our lifetime this year.
Unreal. So, what a landmark. Congrats.
Yeah. It's been a long journey, but I mean, there's proof of product, proof of a company now.
That's big. It's a big business. 10 million is a huge milestone. What is kind of next, I suppose, is in like, that's where the business is now. You seem like a really ambitious guy. What's the next evolution? Because you're obviously a keen marketer. You can see trends. You can feel what's happening. What do you think is happening in the market now?
The big focus for us is the US. So a third of our business is already in the US. And we just want to keep growing it. Like, we have a lot of competition in the UK, and the UK market is very like stagnant at the minute, I think.
Really?
Not just sports jerseys, but like, I just don't think people have as much purchasing power as they did maybe a year or two ago. Like, we have a government talking down like the prospects and stuff like that. I can't speak to what it is like in Ireland with the politics. I don't know enough about that, but especially in the US, I know they're heading into recession, but they have so much purchasing power. Like, when I was over in the US there, it was hard to go to like the Dodgers game without spending $100, $200 there. It's a completely different culture. So for us, we're 100% subscription in the US. We just want to keep growing that. It's predictable revenue.
Amazing.
It's a good business. And it's slightly different to the UK. So in the UK and Ireland, people want shirts from Europe or America, but in the US they want shirts from the UK. So
it's a perfect model for you, really.
Yeah, it's good. And I think with the World Cup going there, it's big for us. And then we're just looking at new sports as well. So we just launched basketball. We'd love to do more. It just has to be the right supply chain to justify doing it.
Well, there's a lot to, I want to dig into there. I want to come back to the supply chain in a minute, but just I wanted to talk to you about just the US expansion then. How did you get started? Because the big thing, especially in Ireland, in Belfast, and like even pockets of the UK, they're like, oh, it's too small here to survive. You have to go abroad. It's the kind of thing you hear founders told all the time. And it's kind of cliched advice. It's true advice, but it's cliched advice because you're like, yeah, but how? So how did you, first of all, identify the US would be your big market, and then secondly, go after it?
It wasn't like a huge master plan at the start. It was just on Shopify. You can sell anywhere pretty much. And we maybe just duplicated our ads that we were running in the UK and Ireland and ran them in like a worldwide campaign to like any country. And then Meta just decides like what's the best country out of that to like get purchases. I think the US was like the best, like the CPAs were coming in nice, and like the feedback in the comments and the customers were like repurchasing when they ordered. So like we were selling maybe to like multiple countries at the time, say like Germany, Spain. So we're testing all those audiences at the same time, and the US was coming in healthy in terms of like CPA. Then also just made sense because they speak English. We don't have to go out and hire a translator. And then we did like the maths on how much it cost to ship there. And then we tested just putting the price up and the price up and price up, and they still kept buying.
Okay.
So it was just like a evolution. Like, we kept learning. And then we were like, yeah, we're going to go in on the US here. And so it was pretty much the same store as we ran in the UK. We just changed football to soccer, shirt to jersey. And then about 3 months ago, we decided to go subscription only in the US because about 70% of customers were subscribing off the bat.
Wow. That's, I wouldn't have thought of that. I was really surprised when you told me earlier that the subscription model was going as strong as it was. Because when I think of subscription, I think of disposables, consumables. I think of like coffee and stuff I use every month. And, you know, it automatically runs out. Or 30 days are up. I have no more coffee. Whereas like a football shirt, like, I wouldn't have thought that would work. Why do you think that works?
I think because of those things we were referencing earlier from your childhood, like Panini stickers and Match Attacks and FIFA. You were collecting to build something.
I was obsessed with the Panini.
Yeah. So obsessed. I think it's just similar, like you're collecting to build something. This time it's just the wardrobe. You know, stuff to wear to five-a-side or the gym or stuff to play career mode around or football manager save.
Sitting there in your full kit playing football manager. There is a huge push towards collectibles. I'm seeing this like in multiple different sectors now. It's really, really interesting. And it's almost become, we had Kat and Killian in from the Luxury Exchange and they sell designer handbags and goods. And like their business is rocketing because like high value collectibles, they're kind of collectibles, but also kind of consumables or also wearables, but like classic Chanels, things like that might be $4,000 or $5,000. Mm-hmm. They're really, really popular now. So do you think football is kind of going the same way?
Yeah, definitely. I think what helps with our product is like you can wear it and you're not just like hanging up in your wardrobe and sitting on it for like 30 years before.
Not going in a wrapper or a box.
Yeah. And you can get memories around it. But I think the element is like you're in a shirt no one else could be wearing. Like no one else is going to be turning up to the gym wearing like a second division Indian side. But everyone else will be wearing Gymshark tops or stuff like that. So I think it's unique, it's collectible, but it's also just wearable.
So then I love the US expansion idea, like just an experiment, right? So on, it's called the entrepreneur experiment because I believe business is just a series of experiments until you find what the winning formula is for you. Like you found it and now you're finding new versions of that. And it's often simpler than we think. It was just open Shopify to all, set marketing to all, see where the chips lie. Obviously, you did clever things around it, you know, the phrasing and things like that. So how do you then, so you're based up just in Belfast, right? So how do you then like ramp that up? Because obviously the US is such a big market. So how did you then go from selling like just to the UK and Ireland and some in Europe to like then servicing like the US? Because I'd imagine there's a bit more to it.
Yeah. So we still fulfill from Belfast, like, we ship with Royal Mail, arrives in 5 to 7 days, fully tracked end to end. It's like pretty good. Like customers are happy with that fulfillment. The marketing's a bit harder. So what we do is we find Americans living in Ireland. So we come down to Dublin quite a bit for that. And we hire them for the day and then we just film scripts with them.
No way.
Yeah.
So you do ads, you ads. Find them here, living here.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that.
Americans.
Because people want to be marketed to in their native kind of accent slash tang.
Still some of the best performing ads are founder ads with my accent in it. We don't like dress up the fact, like we don't try to hide that we're shipping them from Ireland. That's kind of our USP is like, these are European jerseys you're getting.
Yeah. Especially if they want the European, you know, jersey, if they want the actual authentic, because I think there's a lot of it's a lot of fake stuff online now, right? Yeah. There's a lot of kind of like spoof websites just knocked up. You kind of go to buy and you're like, there's no contact us, there's no like address. It's always the first giveaway, there's no like physical address for the business, and you're like, don't think this is real. And then, you know, if you end up buying and you're like, you get the order and it's like coming from China in 4 to 5 weeks, and you're like, oh, balls.
Yeah, I know many of my mates like sent me their new top and they're like, oh, what do you think of this? And I was like, yeah, it's class, but it's not real for 20 quid. It's 3 washes away from the name set peeling off the
back. That's it. Yeah. Is that ripe or rampant, I mean, in football, like the kind of fake jersey thing?
Yeah, and I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. I think like jerseys stupid expensive these days. Like, you're talking 75-80 quid for a new one.
It's crazy. Like, you're talking over 100 euro now, which is a lot of cash.
Yeah, and it doesn't cost them that to produce them, I'll tell you that much. No. Like, they make a good markup on those. And it's not the club making the markup. The club maybe buys them at like 35, 40 pounds from the supplier. So the supplier's making huge money on that. So I think, like, football is made for the working man at the start of the... Mm. So I think, you know, 20 quid jerseys is just... It's kind of natural because not everyone's going to spend 100 quid.
Well, when you go on holidays to Spain or whatever, and the lads are on the beach, they're selling you all the Real Madrid tops for like 25 quid. And people are buying them because, again, it might be a family of four. They've got three kids. They can get 3-4 jerseys for the kids for Real Madrid. They're going to wear them out in 6 months anyway. So there's,
Even in South America, when I was traveling there, Central America, it was near impossible to buy an authentic jersey. You could only buy, there was just shops full of fake ones, but no, like, it was tough. I had to buy them in the airports. That was the only place I could find that sold authentic jerseys.
Okay. So for you, I suppose this kind of brings us nicely onto the supply chain. Is it hard then to supply and find real authentic jerseys, especially for the unusual ones you're getting?
It definitely is to convince. So we get offers from clubs and we get offers from manufacturers. Preferably we buy from manufacturers because that's like a sustainable model. We can go to them, we can go, right, we want orders in 3 months' time, 6 months' time, t-shirts. Well, clubs just sell you, they're like dead-end stock that they can't get rid of. It's tough to convince manufacturers that this is like a good, reliable source of like sales for them. And so we work with, I would call them B-tier like manufacturers. So we don't have Nike, Adidas, or Puma, like A-tier. We have big clubs. We have Castore, Umbro, Hummel, Jovova, even going smaller than that, 656, Icarus, less well-known manufacturers. So like the dream would be to get Nike, Adidas, Puma on board, but, and I think it would be valuable for them, but it's just hard to convince them because they're so big. Like, they have their main channels they focus on, they just sell to JD and then they'll sell on their own website.
Yeah. So I suppose, is it kind of stuff that's kind of gone like out of season? Is it stuff that's like gone kind of like last year's jersey? Like, we're recording this in July, so now all like United have launched a new one, you're going to see all these new jerseys released. So is the stuff that, like, who gets left holding the bag kind of metaphorically in terms of like all the older jerseys? Like, where do they end up?
Yeah, so when it comes to like end of season, say United, their crap season,
it's an understatement.
Yeah, they're sitting on maybe like 8,000 units that they can't shift. So they could try selling to their fans for like £10 a pop, but then in 2 weeks' time they've got a new kit that they're trying to sell for 70 quid, so that gets a bit hard. So they try to offload them to like either us, or they'll sell them to like clearance houses like TK Maxx or M&M Direct. So yeah, that is old season stock, but we try and buy new season stuff from the manufacturers. So we would go to, say, Hummel and be like, we want 1,000 tops from this club this season. And then they would produce and they give their cut to the clubs and stuff like that.
Okay. So you're actually producing new stuff as well. Yeah. It's not just classic stuff from like the retro stuff or anything like that. It's just all kind of newer stuff. And do you have preferences then? Like, do you say, oh, like, you know, US is getting really hot right now, can we get as many, you know, LA Galaxy shirts, or can we get as many like Inter Miami shirts as possible? Like, do you kind of try pick that, or are you at the mercy of what they'll give you?
No, we try pick them. So initially we were at the mercy of like, just because we needed shirts and we didn't have kind of authenticity, like people didn't trust us. We were at the mercy of suppliers, but now we got a lot of control. So we go to them, we want 1,000 of this, 1,000 of that, 1,000 of that. So it's getting there, it's getting a better supply chain. The problem is when we enter new sports is building out that supply chain again. So we've just entered basketball and we've got a good supply chain. So for instance, we've got Fenerbahce tops, we've got Napoli tops, we've got London Lion tops. So those are like three big teams all in Europe for basketball. And we've got like maybe six more teams that we're working on for future months. But if we were to go down NFL or even Gaelic, it's hard to get the right suppliers who are willing to work with you.
And then what's your favorite jersey of all time?
Of all time? I don't know. I like jerseys that I wear a lot, so I like this Jamaica jersey. My favourite one that I own is a PSG 2007-2008 away top, which has, it's like brown, it's V-neck, it has Eiffel Towers sublimated on it, which almost looks...
The editor on YouTube will flash up an image right now. So go to YouTube and watch if you want to see that.
Yeah, this Eiffel Towers almost look like Louis Vuitton, so it likes like looks nice. Like a bit like a Louis Vuitton bag. It's kind of cool. It's really hard to get. It's about £200.
PSG have partnered with Louis Vuitton now, haven't they? Or partnered with some designer?
I don't know if it's Louis Vuitton. I know they've got Jordan. I know Louis Vuitton actually.
Real Madrid. Sorry, it's Real Madrid partnered last week with a designer. So like you are seeing that kind of like elevation of what would have been football wear, would have been kind of looked down upon almost, whereas now they're starting to like almost be like a cachet to it.
Yeah. And even Louis Vuitton, they're now the same people who own that own Paris FC, PSG's rivals.
Yes.
Bought them last year. So I think they're going to do a collab together, like Louis Vuitton, Paris FC. Trying to think, is there any others? I mean, when I was in the States there, you saw Kith, which is a very big like skatewear street brand. They had collabs with Adidas, kind of just making retro tops, but without the like famous retro tops, but without the club's badge there, their own Kith badge and stuff like that.
Yeah, like it kind of makes sense. You talked earlier about the Panini and the kind of match attack. Like as that consumer gets older, they get more purchasing power. But yet they're still football fans.
Yep.
You very rarely you just suddenly go, oh, I'm just not into it anymore. Like if you're a football fan, a passionate football fan when you're younger, you're still obsessed when you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. Like so as you get older, your purchasing power goes up and up and up and up and up. So it makes sense for brands to be able to open up that avenue to buy something, but it, you just don't look like an adult toddler running around the place. You look like, oh, that's kind of cool. That's unusual. Mm-hmm. What's that? You know, even when I go to United matches, it's often more interesting to look at the fans and the players. So you're kind of like looking around going, oh, that's a cool jersey. I haven't seen that one before. Or they kind of remixed like an old, really old retro jersey and Cantona 7s on the back. And you're like, brings you back to happier times when you actually remember some success. Yeah. So like it's stuff like that. You're tapping into that nostalgia. Like, so it's really interesting. So this the supply chain then look sounds quite complicated. What are the other kind of like unexpected things that people will kind of look at you and go, oh, he's 4 years in, he's going to hit 10 million revenue. Like, they're serious figures, like 4 million in, 10 million revenue. What are the other kind of bumps along the way that you're like, ooh, never actually expected that to come out of there?
Yeah, we've had tons of problems. Like, we've had stuff, like really stupid stuff, like Christmas, our first Christmas, our box manufacturer was like so busy we had to go and get a new one. The new one produced, so our boxes are 2.5 centimeters tall. They made the boxes 25 centimeters tall, so like that tall, shoebox size. So that was really infuriating. It basically added about £4 extra per parcel when you're like shipping
them.
It's
ridiculous. Yeah. Like what so, is in this?
Yeah.
Just like one tiny shirt and bubble wrap.
Yeah, oh, it was ridiculous.
At what stage did you discover that there were 25 centimeters tall?
When they turned up on our doorstep. Yeah.
How many?
I think it was 10,000.
Oh Christ.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just imagine you sitting there all put together the first box. You're like, oh, weird. It's a faulty one. Oh, two faulty ones in a row. What are the chances? Oh yeah. Jesus. What did you do?
We ended up cutting the boxes down. So
oh, clever.
It took a while to figure it out, but we realized you could cut the boxes down with a little bit of sellotape.
Oh,
it looked reasonable.
What a nightmare.
But we basically had like 10 people just cutting boxes. Like, we had to buy like so many like industrial scissors essentially, and it kept breaking as well after a while. So 10 people just sat there. It was the worst job, just cutting boxes.
That's not a good Christmas. No. Just earning a few extra quid for Christmas, and then there's that. Yeah. You're like, oh no. So like, it's like, that's real. Like, I've had loads of product companies that come through here, and they all have a story. A great friend of mine now, she said, I think it was her second product maybe, arrived into the warehouse, and she went in and she was delighted, and she goes in and she picks it out and she's looking at it and she goes, oh, deadly. And she's like looking around and she goes, there's no barcodes on any of these. So she'd print something like 30,000 barcodes, and one by one by one put them all on. So like, there's all these things. Again, it comes back to the management thing, right?
Yeah.
There's all these little details, which
just little happen. Bumps on the road. Like, we've had so many. Like, I'm trying to think of others. We worked with a marketing agency, same one that took us from when we were very young, and did a really good job. They then promoted our account manager out because he'd done a really good job. And then we got the junior. And the next thing you know, you're spending money on stuff you never should have. So like, they spent £20,000 in the Spanish market when we weren't even selling into Spain. Oh, we were like, decided we're not going to do Spain, but they still spent £20,000 on like marketing to a store that was like defunct.
Wasn't going anywhere.
So that was awful. And then at the time, they were also doing something silly. They were like making Google ads like really high spend, like £40,000 a month. When it's like, should never be more than £3,000 a month. So there's like those bumps, and you're like, oh, we've just thrown away stupid money by just trusting these people because they've done a good job previously. It's funny because they still use our brand as like a case study to like get clients in.
Okay. Because your brand is strong now. So, I mean, yeah. And you're an e-com D2C. So like, what's working now in 2025? What are the things you are doing? Because we did chat about this off air. We're kind of just discussing like what's, you know, often people gatekeep, and kind of you go to events and conferences and people are like telling you what way may work last year, or kind of highbrow, kind of hand wavy stuff, kind of that you can't really implement. So what is the stuff you're doing that you'd advise like brands or even people starting out to do?
Yeah. Big focus for us is just creating as many good quality ads as possible. So we've kind of pivoted from, like, this time last year, we maybe made like 10 new ads a month maximum, and they're probably crap ads. We're aiming to make 400 a month by the end of summer.
Whoa.
Yeah.
How are you doing that?
We've had to pivot into basically like a creative company. So like last year we had one guy just making like Instagram posts and emails. And we've had to change. So now we've got his skill set was like not even graphic design or like video editing or anything like that. He just liked football and wanted to do marketing. So we've pivoted into hiring a proper graphic designer, proper editors. So we got two editors, graphic designer. One of the editors is trained in like creative strategy as well. And then we're trying to train the second editor into creative strategy too. So we'll probably hire another editor as well, just to speed everything up. So it's like a team of three at the minute, with me quite involved. And then we'll probably be a team of four. And it's just, we're trying to make as many quality videos. So we hire basically models or actors for a day, and we'll shoot 20 videos. And then we'll go back, edit them, script write for the next one off of what's worked, what didn't work.
What's working? Give me some formulas. Obviously, I don't want you all your trade secrets, but yeah. give me some. So like, I noticed, like, for example, in the pod, you know, if there's like a really strong hook, so I'll do a quick fire round with you shortly, and I'll be like, I'm going to give you €1 million. You can invest in one person. Who is it? Great hook. And you go, I'm going to have to give it to Gary, and I'm going to tell you why. Great setup. And then, bam, bam, the payoff is the two people. It's like, when we post a clip like that, inevitably it works. Or book reviews are big, weirdly enough, for us. What kind of like formulas and kind of like tips work for you?
We found like fake podcast ads are working.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. I told someone to do this last weekend. I was at a retreat and they were like, oh, you know, yeah, it's easy for you because you do a podcast, and we, you know, it's only me. And I was like, that's exactly what I told them to do. I said, do a fake podcast, get 30 questions, get someone to come in, ask you the questions. Yeah. Fake podcast. And now you're going to have a real podcast.
Yeah. What else?
When you say fake podcast, sorry, I kind of jumped across you there. What do you mean by that?
So the way we've done it isn't even fake. Essentially, there's a local podcast, two guys or three guys close to us who like make a podcast, and we just ask them after they finished the podcast, could they sit down and just talk about Shirt in a Box? And we give them like three things we wanted them to talk about, and they just recorded it and sent it over to us, and we paid them for it, the time. So it's not like it's a manufactured conversation, but it looks authentic, comes across as authentic, and it's not being like too fake or anything by like them promoting it. It's just talking about the USPs.
Yeah,
it's just a different way of like expressing the same stuff we've done before. The fact you can avoid your rivals' teams, or you get a shirt you've never seen before.
And it's tapping into something that's really popular. Like podcasts like this, the minute are really popular. Like everything goes in cycles, right? Me and you were talking about earlier. Like I'll have to evolve this again now, probably in 6 months, to look different, to feel different. But you kind of have to tap into what's popular. Like you can't be pushing a rock uphill all the time, going, nah, it's just real cool, creative, man. I'm just going to do it this way. Yeah. So you got to tap into what's popular and what's doable. That's very doable for most companies. What else do you find works?
We've had some success with this, and I think we're going to do more of it. Is like you start the video, the hook is with like a Snapchat kind of text bar across it, because it just feels really like organic.
Okay.
So we've got one, it's really stupid, like really, really stupid. Does well in the US. It's me and Joe in our office just throwing like a box, like a frisbee, and there's like a wee caption that goes across it, like a Snapchat bar that says, what the heck are these guys doing? And then it just cuts into me explaining about the box. Like I catch it and then I open up the box and explain everything about it. So that's really cringy, but it works. Other things, founder ads, like I do a lot of just explaining what the product is. And it's normally like interrupting. So I'll be sitting down at my desk and then the video will come across and be like, oh, Rory, what if I don't want to get a Man United top? And I'll be like, oh, you can avoid Man United, and just explain it. And those work really good. So
ads that don't feel like ads.
Essentially, yeah. We want to be as organic as possible. And we're trying to learn by essentially going on to TikTok and just seeing what's organic and working on TikTok. And then just replicating it into making ads.
It's incredible how quickly TikTok changes, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like the trends are just like so rapid. So for you guys, it's all about being on top of that. It's all about kind of seeing what's kind of suddenly in.
Yeah. And we would scout other brands as well. So not in our industry, but like you're looking at what other, you know, people who are doing successful with ads. You're looking at, say, the Essence Vault or Space Goods or Cleans or, you know, big brands in the UK or US. What's working for them? And then you're thinking, how can I apply this to us?
Yeah. I think that's the thing, isn't it? Is looking sideways, looking like outside your industry. Because I think, you know, winners focus on winners, losers focus on winners. It's looking adjacent to you, kind of going, look, what's working for big companies who can spend huge budgets, who can probably test this 1,000 times, whereas we get like maybe 10 tests. So like 400 bits of creative. This kind of ties into something I was saying at the weekend as well, is that like, I think each company now, ambitious company, is going to have like a media arm. You're going to have to think like a media company. We were talking earlier about the podcast and what it's going to become. Like media is the new marketing, like long, you know, consistent touch points with the customer. So from your kind of customer acquisition, where's the biggest channel for you right now?
It would all be Facebook and Instagram. That's where we acquire pretty much 100% of our customers.
So Instagram is still the number one channel?
Yeah. We have an ad as... like we started off on TikTok as a brand, then TikTok went all in on shops and lives, which doesn't suit us. It's like a female demographic, that, so.
Interesting.
I think it maybe will come round. But it's one of those ones, it's like when I start buying stuff on TikTok shop, then I know like our customers are ready for TikTok shop and our brand is.
That's a good point. I've never bought anything on TikTok. Like I consume a lot of content there, but I've never... because now I kind of have this like, oh, I quickly swipe. The minute I see someone with like ad, commission, pay, commission, I just flick on.
See.
Whereas a few months ago, I was kind of going, oh, interesting. They've this now. And now I'm like, because it doesn't talk to me. Like, I don't see any ads from you, or I don't see any ads from kind of companies I'd be into.
I think it definitely suits a certain niche at the minute. Like, I think like the beauty niche, definitely female buyers, it's really strong for.
Is that lower purchase value, or what do you think that, why do you think that is so popular at the minute?
Maybe females are just more impulsive or more trusting of the platform. They probably spend way longer on TikTok than your average male does. Like, I think your average male probably spends maybe 15, 30 minutes. Some people maybe an hour, but like females probably an hour, 2 hours at least. So they're on there a lot.
So for you, is TikTok brand building then? It's not actual.
We don't even post at all on TikTok.
Really?
Yeah, we've given up. Like,
interesting.
I think it will come back. We will add more advertising channels again. But like you can, Meta takes you so far. Like, it's so big. You don't need to like diversify too much, I don't think. We will probably add TikTok and Snapchat in the next 6 months.
But if Meta can get you to 10 million, it's not a bad journey for a lot of founders. I think there's a real lesson there in that you can be trying to do all things, right? You can be trying to do this and this and this and this, and it's so difficult as a company of any size to do something well, but especially as a smaller company. It can be really difficult because it's a manpower thing. Like you said, like you have a team of 3-4 now just doing Meta, just doing new creatives. Like, so for you to then go, oh, then now we're going to have an email marketing team, now a TikTok team, now a Snapchat team.
Yeah.
I think people underestimate how difficult each channel is. So then deep diving a wee bit into e-com, what's the kind of e-com space like in 2025? Because I spoke to a lot of e-com founders after kind of COVID, and they felt that there was this massive slowdown. As kind of everything opened back up, they kind of the boom kind of ended for them. What have you seen?
There definitely was a boom in just people have greater purchasing power post COVID. There's a lot of data, especially in the US, about like slowdowns at the minute in new shoppers online. But I think if you've got an innovative product, you've got good marketing, you stay on top of the trends, it doesn't really matter too much. Like, I think if you can win in the bad times, then when you win in the good times, it'll just be even better. E-commerce is still here to stay. Like, it's going to keep growing. I think ChatGPT is the interesting one. Like, you now can put in, like, I want to buy XYZ. Like, I did it recently with the Wi-Fi wasn't connecting great to the back of my house. And I was like, right, I need to buy something to help with this. And then I was asking ChatGPT, and then it gave me these products to the links to go buy there.
I saw that for the first time 2 weeks ago, and I was like, ooh. I was kind of happy and also kind of going, oh no, I don't want this to become like a Google search.
It's going
to
become that, I think.
I think it has to, because if it's so valuable, it's so powerful.
Like, yeah.
It's just, it's so accurate. And the recommendations are generally so good that I would trust it.
Yeah.
It's building this immense trust moat of like, yeah, I need a Wi-Fi booster to the back of my house. My house is 4-bed. It's built in 1970. It's got this and that and that. And go, oh, okay, Gary, it sounds like you need this. And you're like, sounds like I do. Yeah. Bang. And that purchasing journey then done within ChatGPT. So you think that'll whole close that whole loop. Your consumer journey will start in ChatGPT and end there.
Yeah. I think we're probably like 5 years away from people like me going on to ChatGPT and like paying £1,000 to get in front of 100,000 people each month. Like, it just turns into another platform, because I don't know how else they monetize it. Like, obviously they have subscriptions and stuff like that.
Yeah, but £20 a month for me and you isn't going to make them the billions and billions that they're worth now. It's data play again, and I suppose it's constantly learning. It is scarily accurate. What else in e-com is kind of like happening right now? What are you kind of what trends are you noticing that you're like, oh, okay, that's changed since like a year ago or 2 years ago?
Definitely a lot of like successful e-commerce brands now going into bricks and mortar. That has to be the end goal for like any e-commerce company. Like, you need to get bricks and mortar, whether you own your own store or you got placements in shops. I think that's a big focus for a lot of people.
I'd love to see you do a pop-up at Christmas.
Yeah, we do pop-ups at like the Christmas market in Belfast, and it does well. I think we're probably a year or year and a half away from a full store. I think that would be, I'd want it to be like an experience.
So, that's what I'm saying. I can imagine in my head now, I'm kind of going in, it's like half kind of memorabilia, it's half an experience. you know, you go in and there's a bit of theatre about like, you're up next. There's a bit of a queue, obviously, to build anticipation. Then I come up and I press the big button. Did you ever see that thing at Wimbledon? I think it's Wimbledon, where they're like, you ring the bell and like the hand with the champagne comes out through the thing. This is what I would see for you is like, I think it's in my head because Wimbledon was on a few weeks ago. There's like a bell. I've seen a weddings as well. There's like a bell you ring and there's a big, it's like the wall behind us here with the curtains, except it's all like, you know, fake grass and you ring the bell and then this like gloved hand comes out with champagne.
Yeah.
That'd be class. It's in, like you press the big red button and there's like a countdown timer and then the wheel starts to spin and next thing the box comes out and you open it on the thing. It'd be unbelievable marketing as well.
Yeah, I think it'd be class from just like getting feedback from customers. I think if I wanted experience, we'd have to make it unique around how you purchase the mystery box. But I think even just on a simple level, like, can we get big screens up? Can we get football going? Can we get a football table in? Can we sell, maybe we can't sell pints, but can you sell beers and bottles, you know, and just make it like a bit of a man cave.
Even around games, like you said, the World Cup coming next year to America, that'd be really cool. Even around like the FA Cup, the Champions League. You know, like Champions League now has become like almost this thing in itself. Like it's all talk about it. We all watch it. Like even the United aren't anywhere near it, but I still watch a lot of the games because the quality is so good. Like there's so much scope for you to do fun things.
Yeah, definitely. When we keep going into new sports, like is there anywhere in Belfast, there's definitely not where you can go in and just purchase basketball jerseys or you can purchase rugby jerseys. Not really, because JD... Sports Direct just sell big teams.
Yeah.
And that's all they care about.
Yeah, it's that kind of discovery piece, isn't it? I think, again, to reference Luxury Exchange, I see a lot of similarities between the two businesses here. Like, they're curators. You know, they're like you, right? They're curators. They're picking the best quality stuff that they're like, I know the clients will like this because of XYZ, and they do all the curation. They make sure it's legit, and they... This is a classic from 1980. This Chanel, there's only 50 of them made in the world. You know, how unusual. No one's going to have this in Cork or wherever it is. It's the same with you. Like, you're creating these kind of unique experiences for people.
Yeah.
So, the basketball is next. US expansion is the next big project as well. What's that going to look like?
I think we've so much room to grow in the US with just football alone, like, or soccer for them. World Cup next year, which I think will be huge. We've got about 2,500 subscribers in the US. I think we could probably be sitting at 20,000 by middle of next summer.
Amazing.
Which would be really good. And then we just keep rolling out new sports. Like, football's the fourth or fifth biggest sport in the US. We're trying to do basketball. So we think similar way to like, we want NBA tops here in the UK and Ireland. They would want European jerseys, especially with the rise of like Jokic and Doncic, like European players. That market could appeal to them. So that's our angle. We try to do basketball. So if we get that successful, then we move on to maybe baseball. Like, baseball's big in Asia. Is there jerseys there, especially with Otani getting big in America? You know, does that appeal to people? Then American football, can we find American football teams around the world and buy their jerseys? I think America's like very untapped for all those sports. There's no real competitor for us.
So your job is to go around the world, find interesting variations on something that's really popular in America, and then bring it back over there.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I think for us to do that, we probably need to hire someone like really skilled at that, because at the minute I do all the sourcing, it's too much of my time split away from it. But yeah, I think
it's almost like a culture spotter. It's almost like someone's like spots trends.
Yeah,
it's like when the Irish guy was announced as the head of design. I'm gonna forget the name now. It's Dior, I think, maybe. And he was wearing an Irish football jersey from like the 90s.
Yeah,
at a fashion show, and you're like, that's kind of cool. It's like, yeah, things go in waves, right?
We need a door opener, someone who like can get us into these sports, and then we need someone who's got vision as well, who can like spot which are the right sports to go into for the US, I think. Yeah,
but even football, I think there's a huge, like you said there, soccer, whatever you want to call it, like there's huge growth. Like, if you look at Saudi, the Middle East, like China tried to do that a couple of years ago. It all fell apart. Whereas it feels like the Middle East is now establishing itself. Like you see Saudi, it doesn't seem like a flash in the pan. It seems like they're trying to establish like a proper league. And as football becomes more global, at the Club World Cup, it's kind of been laughed at. It probably is a bad idea, but probably more bad on timing than it is in terms of concept. You're kind of taking the Champions League and bringing it more global, which I don't think is a bad idea in theory. It's just, I think, just fatigue from too many games, both physically for the players, but also mentally for fans at the end of the season. I think if that was like mid-season, I'd probably be glued to it.
Yeah, I don't think it's perfect right now, but I think it will be here to stay, the Club World Cup.
Because it kind of makes sense. Because I kind of was watching like the coverage of the last kind of week or so, and I was like, I can kind of see the appeal here. Because it's like you said, like, oh, I've never heard of that team. And I'd be reading The Athletic every single morning. And I'd be watching, reading their match reports. I'm like, oh, I never knew that team existed. And it was a great, actually could be an interesting partnership for you. The guy from New Zealand, the Irish guy, have you seen him?
No.
He's a physio. He moved to New Zealand. He was playing like Sunday league football here in Ireland. And he moved to New Zealand and he signed for one of their like proper teams. And he was playing like Benfica and Bayern Munich a couple of weeks ago. I'll send him to you on TikTok. Really interesting. He did like a behind the scenes of like, here's what happens when you play in the Club World Cup.
Yeah.
Just regular lads, like, you know, just now they're professionals in New Zealand, but like just regular lads. So like there's a real, stories like that are cool.
Yeah.
Because football is so commercial and stuff like that. Whereas you kind of want to go, oh, a physio from Ireland went down to New Zealand. Now he's playing against like Bayern Munich.
Yeah.
Like there's so many stories like that in football.
Yeah, there is. Even, is it the Fluminense goalkeepers, like 44 or something like that? Like, there's so many cool kind of, like, storylines within football. I think that the World Cup, the Club World Cup, it'll come good. I think they need to get better European sides in. Like, I don't know why it was Salzburg there, for instance.
Yeah.
Why Liverpool, who are the champions of England, aren't there. But Chelsea are...
Was it off rankings or something? Was it from a couple of years ago or something?
Yeah, it's from the last couple of years.
Because I couldn't understand it either.
Which doesn't feel right. So I think...
It has to be current. I agree with you. Because in 2 years, a lot can happen in 2 years. You could be unbelievable 2 years ago. You could be absolutely shite now.
Yeah.
And weirdly, Chelsea are doing unbelievably well.
Yeah.
Which is strange in itself. But like you see City there, which kind of makes sense. But yeah, it's weird Liverpool weren't there. You kind of need those big teams for it to be relevant. Like it's like when the Champions League was open to like five or six teams from each league. You're kind of going, oh, it's not really Champions League then, is it?
Yeah.
But it was okay because it was the four best teams or the three best teams. So I think they have to do it off the most recent rankings.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think move it around in the calendar. It doesn't make sense to have it on smack bang in the middle of the summer, especially when, like, I love football. I watch football like hours and hours every week, but it still didn't make sense to me in June, July. And also, I can't help the teams.
No.
Now, I'm not crying any tears for City or Chelsea. I hope they're absolutely rubbish this year. But it can't help them to go from like 60 games into, you know, more games. A month. It's on for a month as well. Yeah. It seems too long.
And the intense heat, like awkward times they're playing on, and the pitches they're playing on at the minute is like not even football pitches. They're newly laid grass. Apparently it's crap. So yeah, I don't think it's perfect, but I think it'll stick. I just don't know how they'll do it, but I think it's too big a thing to like fail.
Yeah. Well, everyone kind of looked at the World Cups in the Middle East and they're like, oh, it'll never work, and it kind of worked. You know, it did kind of work. Like, you know, money will kind of open a lot of doors. So for you then, kind of looking ahead, right, for the next kind of couple of years, when we're sitting down again in 2 years to do the next episode, what will you like to have happened, or what will have happened?
Hopefully we're about four times the size we are now.
40 million. Okay, I'm just going to make a note. And then in 2 years' time, I'm like, Rory, you said 40 million. Okay.
I think it's definitely possible. Maybe one more sport other than football and basketball. Definitely a big business in the US and UK. And hopefully a ton of happy customers and a happy team too.
Very wholesome.
Yeah, we've got a really good team now. Like, it took us a while to get there, but like the team we've got at the minute's solid. Like, I've made so many bad mistakes in hiring, like, over the years. We had fellas who are like when I was on holiday, would be sitting in the office playing video games on their laptop and stuff like that. I was like, what are you doing? Or people falsifying timesheets. But now we just got good people who are good at their job and like football.
Again, it's time. It's time, isn't it? Like, it's just, yeah. Sometimes it's just experience. You just don't know what you don't know. That's all right. Like, it's okay to make mistakes as long as you don't want to make them again. Right, quick fire round. What book has the most impact on you?
It has to be The 4-Hour Working Week. Even though I do not work 4 hours, I work way more than that. But
it's the theory behind it. I read it as well, probably 15 years ago now, maybe. It was the first book. I was like, oh my God, this is it.
Changes your perspective on life.
Completely. Because we think, even as business owners, you think, oh, not, you know, 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, build a business, sell X for Y. Whereas that was like, no, it's leverage, time, different business model. Like you with the subscription model, like that's total genius. But like, not in a million years would I have kind of gone, oh yeah, that makes logical sense. Kind of taught you to teach or to think a bit like just left of center.
Yeah. And a lot of the delegation stuff from that book, I still use to this day, you know. So it's, I reread it last summer when I was on holiday. And I loved it as much. I was like writing notes.
I wish he'd make a new one.
Yeah.
I actually wish he'd write a new version for 2025 because I think he wrote that probably 15 years too early. Not too early, but he predicted everything. He predicted the world as we live in now 15, 20 years earlier, which is mad. I'd love to see him do a new version for 2025, what that would look like. Because there's so much spoof, right? There's so much nonsense around like, oh, work on your laptop, go to Bali. There's so much nonsense over here. I'd love someone with credibility and pedigree to kind of go, okay, here's what, you know. So I have three things I think about. Time freedom, health freedom, and financial freedom. They're the three things that I kind of like value above all. Mm-hmm. So like, I'd love someone to write that book to go, here's what I'd like you to teach people. Because there's people preying on young entrepreneurs who are 18 to, you know, 24. You know, drop ship this and, you know, trade your way to a million. And like, you know, hard graft. There's hard graft behind all good businesses. What's your superpower?
I think I can absorb a lot of stress before like losing my cool. like a high stress tolerance. Remaining calm, I think, probably the same thing. I'd say that's optimism as well. Like, I'm very optimistic. When other people see like a problem, I see, it's a problem, but it's a solution as well. We can make
you do seem like a very mellow character. Haven't spent a couple hours since now. You do seem like a chill dude. Do you have a daily habit that you would think is the secret to your success?
Just very calendar, time blocking, ensuring I've got tasks laid out for pretty much every hour, so I know where I am, know what I'm working towards. I think not a lot of people do it, and then they just end up wasting hours. It's something that I try to do every day, just block out calendar for the next few days, ensure what I'm doing.
I'm the exact same. Everything goes in, even travel time. I've started putting in travel time now just because I was like, why are my days kind of empty? You're like, because you're driving for an hour and a half here and driving for an hour and a half there. Yeah, I think it's huge. What entrepreneur should everyone be following in 2025?
I quite like Peter McCauley of Nomadic Watches at the minute.
Oh, he popped up on my timeline this week. Yeah, what's the crack with him?
He's just launched a store. I think the product's super cool. I just think it's a great product, like entry-level luxury watch. Ireland, it's the whole story.
He's making them, is he?
Yeah, he's making them in Ireland.
Class.
The store looks really good. I haven't been in, but just think it's a great model. He was telling me like 2/3 of people come back to buy a watch, a second watch, which I didn't, like, why do you need two watches? But
I would have thought the same.
Yeah, it's like football shirts. Why do you need two football shirts? People still do.
Fair, I'm not into watches either. Yeah. I don't wear one, so I am probably not their customer. But yeah, that's interesting because I saw him. He popped up on my timeline on LinkedIn. I think he was launching the new store. I must have a chat to him. I'm going to give you €1 million. Mm-hmm. You can only invest in one person or one company. Who is it?
Probably Cleans. So they're a shoe company over in England.
Cleans.
Yeah, CLWNS. They are growing really rapid. And I own two pairs of shoes from them. But
they make the shoes?
They make them shoes themselves. So it's their idea is luxury shoes, but without the branding on them. So
oh, nice.
It's just really nice designs.
Like and plain white runners, stuff like that?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Simple designs, really well like manufactured. I think they're made in Portugal. And then the marketing's excellent.
What kind of money?
180 quid they're selling okay. them for.
I must have a look, because I'm always looking for like good, nice runners. Because I wear runners 80% of the time, probably, maybe yeah. more. And yeah, you buy the Nike Air Force Ones, you buy this, you buy that, and they're all like, all right.
Yeah. I think as I've grown older, I like the logo less on a shoe, and I think a lot of people are.
But in general, I don't really wear logos anymore, because it's kind of just you kind of grow out of it.
So I think it's the perfect market fit right now.
Cleans.
And okay. I think it's their marketing is really good. I'm impressed. So I think it's going to go huge.
Okay. What business would you start in 2025 if you're starting again from scratch?
Subscription e-commerce.
Being more specific, give me some examples.
I think men's wallet is very underrated in terms of there's very few e-commerce products that tailor towards it. A lot of e-commerce products are female beauty but men have a lot of purchasing power that they just don't use.
What kind of areas would you look at?
I think beauty is growing quite a lot. Guys are getting a lot more vain. I think it's TikTok stuff. I know so many people moisturize. I've tried to start moisturizing every day, but I forget to do it. I think stuff like that, face wash moisturizer for guys. I think there'll probably be a bit where there's makeup and concealer. I know people who do their eyebrows for guys. So I think that could be a really big market. And I don't think anyone does it great at the minute. I think there's just the existing players like Nivea and Bulldog and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with you on that one. What do you believe other people would strongly disagree with or find strange?
I don't believe in remote working. I think especially when you're a startup, you just need to be in the office. So we're in office every day. We started doing one day flexible work from home. But even that was a push to get me to achieve. I just think you bond better with your teammates. You buy into what you're trying to do. You're maybe slightly less productive because you're talking to people, but I don't think that's a huge loss. Even when you're working from home, you get distracted and stuff, or you can lie about what work you're actually doing. So to build good things, I think you need to be in the office and you need to be surrounded by other people working.
What's been your worst investment?
Probably just a few hires, I think, were probably bad hires. And that's lost time as well as lost money. I think the time is probably, it sets you back because you bring on someone. You maybe give them 3 months because you're after the first month, it's not a good fit. But you have hopes. So you give it 2 more months and then it's still not a good fit. So then you have to go back to the drawing board and then it's maybe another 2 months to find someone. So that's just lost time. And hiring's been a process that I've had to learn again. No one really teaches that, so yeah.
What's better been your over time. Best investment?
Probably the system we have at Shirt in a Box. So we transferred from being automatic fulfillment or from manual fulfillment to automatic. So if you place an order, your shirt gets assigned by a system. So there's no human thought process that goes into, Gary, you get a Liverpool top. It is all done by the system. So that removed so many mistakes that human error would cause. And okay. just smooth, the process quickened up. So yeah, that was really good.
What's the best bit of advice you've heard in the last 12 months?
I just haven't even finished a book called Hire Road Leadership. I got gifted it to me, and it's kind of changed the way I manage and even think. I feel a lot more comfortable managing after reading it.
What's the name? Got a name of the game?
Higher Road Leadership. It's basically you should always see people in the best light possible, give them the benefit of the doubt, and try and never really be negative with them. It's just a really good read. it's changed the way I think about managing.
Okay. We'll do a shirt in the box giveaway as well. Mystery shirt in the box giveaway as well. What do people do? So I'll have to go to our Instagram, go to the podcast Instagram, go to your Instagram. What will we get them to do? Are they going to name their favorite team, name their least favorite team? What will we do?
Name your favorite player from your childhood.
Nice. That'll be a collab on our Instagrams. Go and check that out now. Rory, that was an absolute pleasure. Where can people buy a shirt?
Yeah, mysteryshirtinthebox.com or follow us on social medias at shirtinthebox.
Love it, Rory. That was an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.